ओम हरि ओम तत्सत श्री गुरुभ्यो नमः हरि ओम ओम सहनाववतो सहनो भुनक्तो सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ हरि ॐ तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ ॐ सदाशिवसमारम्भाम् व्यासशङ्करमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्ताम् वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानाम् आलयम् करुणालयम् नमामि भगवत्पादशङ्करम् लोकशङ्करम् शङ्करम् शङ्कराचार्यम् केशवम् बादरायणम् सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ॐ हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदम् पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ ॐ ईशावास्यमिदगुं सर्वम् ईशावास्यमिदगुं सर्वम् यत्किञ्च जगत्याम् जगत् यत्किञ्च जगत्याम् जगत् तेन त्यक्तेन भुञ्जीथा त्यक्तेन भुञ्जीथा मा हृदः कस्य सिद्धनम्
Actually, I'm not following the swaras here, okay? It's only for the sake of learning the mantras.
कुर्वन्नेवेह कर्माणि जिजीविषेत् शतगुं समाः एवं त्वयि नान्यथेतोऽस्ति न कर्म लिप्यते नरे असुर्यानामते लोका अन्धेन तमसावृताः तांस्ते प्रेत्याभिगच्छन्ति एके चात्महनो जनाः
We have seen these three mantras. The third mantra is Ishavasya Upanishad. As we have already seen, the entire teaching is presented. So the first mantra presents the Jnana Yogaha in a nutshell. Second mantra presents Karma Yogaha in a nutshell. And the third mantra onwards until the eighth mantra, as I told earlier, reveal the elaborately comment on the first mantra. And I said in the very beginning, the third mantra praises the knowledge, glorifies the knowledge. Third mantra presents indirectly the glorification of the jnanam knowledge. Why do I say it? It presents the glorification of knowledge indirectly, because there is no glorification of knowledge in the third mantra. There is only condemnation of the ignorance through the condemnation of an ignorant person. And this is called in Sanskritam Nahi Ninda Nyayaha. Ninda means criticism, condemnation. Nindati, censures, condemns, criticizes. That's the word. Nindati is the verb. So Ninda, no condemnation. So Nahi Ninda Nyayaha. As per the Nahi Ninda Nyayaha, when we apply this in writings, or when we follow, it is applied in writings, it implies there is Nahi Ninda means there is no Ninda for the sake of Ninda. So this, the condemnation is not for the sake of condemnation. Condemnation is for the glorification of something else. So ekasya vishayasya ninda, anyasya vishayasya stutihi. Or stutyartha ninda. Ninda natu nindartha parantu anyastutyartha. The condemnation is not for the sake of condemnation, but it is for the sake of glorification of something else. So, if we say, if there is dvaita ninda, condemnation of the duality, perception of duality, which it is actually advaita stutihi. It is a glorification of non-duality. If there is condemnation of bondage, it is moksha stutihi. It is the glorification of freedom. Is it clear? Therefore, condemnation of one thing is for the glorification of the other. Similarly here, the ninda, ajnana ninda, is jnana stutyartha, is for the glorification of knowledge. And the glorification of the knowledge is through the condemnation of the ignorance. And the condemnation of ignorance is presented to the condemnation of the ignorant people that we saw last class. And then there, I want to say a few more things in that verse, then we'll go ahead. So how are the ignorant people condemned here? What is said about the ignorant people? Ignorant people are, said to be Atmahanaha Janaha. I told you very clearly, there is a verb Hanti, Han root, Han Dhatuhu, and from which you get the verb Hanti Gnataha Gnanti. And from there, so, ye janaha atmanam ghananti te, here atmahanaha. In singular it becomes what? Atmanam hanti yaha saha atmaha. Singular is atmaha, the killer of one's own self. One who kills one's own self is Atmaha. Atmahanau, dual. Atmahanaha, plural. Forgetfully, if I said sometime before, earlier, anything else, you have to correct it. Atmaha, Atmahanau, Atmahanaha. Singular, dual, plural. I'm preparing you for proper class, okay? Dual also is there. So here, the ignorant people are said to be the Atmahanaha Janaha. Ye ke cha Atmahanaha Janaha. Who are these Atmahanaha Janaha? Who are these people? Why ignorant people are said to be the destroyers of the self? Because Atma is said to be eternal Nityaha. Nitya Atma, the eternal, immortal, indestructible, imperishable Atma. How can it be destroyed? Isn't it? The question might come. So really it is not, Atma is not destroyed. Atma is ever indestructible only. But still it is figuratively implying, meaning, indicating the ignorant people. Atma is not really destroyed. Not Atma is ever indestructible only. But still, here the ignorant people are said to be the destroyers of the Atma, because the killed person, Hataha Purushaha, the one who is destroyed, one who is killed, now the dead person is not available, is not there. Similarly here, those people who ignore the self, Atmanam ye tiraskurvanti, those people who ignore the self, who neglect the self, and who are not aware of the self being the awareness, who are aware of conscious of the self being the consciousness, who do not know the self, for such people, you know, the unknown self is as good as unnoticed self. No, unknown self is unnoticed self, ignored self, you know, neglected self. Therefore, as good as non-existent, therefore as good as dead. Is it clear? Therefore, self is dead for the ignorant people. Self is alive only for the wise people. Therefore, they are said to be Atmahanaha. 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 I've explained to you already, but I had to start from there to remind you. Then, such people, what happened to those ignorant people who are for whom self is as good as dead? Not really dead, as good as dead. Therefore, those said to be the destroyed, self-destroyers. Those people, abhigacchanti. No, abhigacchanti, they go to. When do they go to? Where do they go to? Pretya. Pretya means marana anantaram. After the death, you know, they're born, they're living, and when the parabdha ends, when they leave this physical body, what happens to them? For them, you know, death does not become the final death. There'll be so many deaths in future. So many deaths following means what now? Again and again, they'll be born continuously. So, pretya abhigacchanti. Okay. Where do they go to? Whom do they reach? Where do they go to? That is what said in the first line. No, lokaha. So, that says, tan, I said last class, tan abhigacchanti. These Atmahanaha Janaha, I repeat you with the Sanskrit word now. These Atmahanaha, ye kecha Atmahanaha Janaha, those ignorant people who are condemned as the Atmahanaha by the Upanishad, those people, pretya, after the fall of the body, they tan gacchanti, they go to them. When the pronoun they go to them means, who go where? Who reach what? ஆத்மஹனஹ கச்சந்தி அபிகச்சந்தி பிரேத்ய தான் கச்சந்தி தே ரீச் தெம் தே கோ தேர் தான் மீன்ஸ் யூனோ அவைகளை தோ தெம் ஹூம் ஹி சேஸ் வி ஹாவ் டு சே எக்ஸ்பிளைன் தான் ஹி இம்ப்ளைஸ் லோகான் கச்சந்தி லோகான் கச்சந்தி அசுரியான் லோகான் தான் அசுரியான் லோகான் கச்சந்தி தே கோ டு தோஸ் லோகாஸ் தோஸ் கோ டு லோகம் ஐ ஆல்ரெடி எக்ஸ்பிளைன் டு யூ த வேர்ல்ட் லோகா ஹேஸ் பி அண்டர்ஸ்டுட் ஐ சிம்பிள் லாஸ்ட் கிளாஸ் ஐ செட் த டைரக்ட் மீனிங் ஆஸ் தேகா ஷரீரம் டுடே ஐ வாண்ட் டு கிவ் லிட்டில் மோர் and a better understanding of the word lokaha. I already said lokyate iti lokaha. So anything which is experienced, lokyate, experience means what? Lokyate means anubhuyate, drishyate, you know, seen, experienced, enjoyed, no, perceived. You can give all these meanings. Anything which is perceived, experienced, enjoyed is lokaha. Therefore, that's why the object universe is called lokaha. And here, lokaha, that which is experienced, enjoyed is lokaha, when you say, it can mean what? Any karma phalam is enjoyed, isn't it? The fruit of action is experienced by us. It implies what? So, lokaha implies, literally it means the world, but here the lokaha implies what? Karma phalam. What is enjoyed? And you say, the what is enjoyment, the object of the enjoyment is what? Fruit of an action. Therefore, it's called karma vyutpattihi. Karma phalam is enjoyed. It's called karma vyutpatti. You can give the meaning. Now, object of enjoyment is the fruit of an action, isn't it? Therefore, it's the fruit of an action happens to be the object of enjoyment. If we take the meaning as karma phalam, the meaning of the word loka as karma phalam, this karma vyutpatti. Okay, then what is karma phalam? The fruit of an action is birth. The prarabdha karma phalam. Your prarabdha karma phalam alone comes in the form of what? Birth. Therefore, every birth is a rebirth only. You don't need to say rebirth. Every birth is punarjanma, which means we had previous janma and this is what? Punarjanma. And the future also will be what? Punarjanma. Every birth is rebirth only. Therefore, janma, the birth itself, is what? The result of action. If you take, therefore, from there, so lokaha is equal to phalam, is karma vyutpatti. If the karma phalam is in what form? In the form of rebirth. If you take, therefore, the lokaha can imply what? Rebirth. If you take it as a rebirth, it is called bhava vyutpattihi. What is implied as karma phalam is what? Bhava vyutpattihi. You can take other meaning is what? Rebirth. So rebirth implies what? What is it which is born? Body. Jayate iti janma. Okay, what is it which is born? Body. Therefore, from rebirth, you can have jayate iti janma. If you take it, what is the janma? Janma is karma phalam. What is janma? That which is born is birth, isn't it? Therefore, you can take it as what? Shariram dehaha. Then it's called kartru vyutpattihi. You can get, you know, we can have kartru vyutpattihi, then bhava vyutpattihi, then you have karma vyutpattihi. You take three verses. So the lokaha, the finally, what is the meaning you take? Body. Okay, so rebirth. So pret lokan tan lokan abhigacchanti means they will be given to rebirths. Lokan, lokaha is in plural word, which means not they will be born again. No, they will go to rebirth means what? They will assume another body. Not once, lokan, continuously, death after death, they will be continuously assuming new bodies, they will be born, reborn again and again and again, endlessly. For lokan means what? So they'll be born again. So they'll continue to remain in the life of transmigration. They'll continue to be in samsara. This is the meaning. And here, these rebirths, every birth, an assumption of, every time assumption of a body is said to be what? No, actually, asuryaha. You know, all those who are born, assuming any type of body is what? Only asuras' bodies only. These rebirths are what? Any birth, any rebirth is a birth of an asura. Any body is asura's body only. Any body is asura's body, any birth is asura's birth. Yes. So what are those bodies? What are those births if we take? And here the question should come. What is that which determines this birth? What is the criterion for rebirth? Is it an simple incident? Is it an accident? Or is it God's will? Bhagavan's will? Because of God's will, there is rebirth. No. It is not a simple incident. It is not an accident. It is not because of God's will. Rebirth is determined by one's own karma. Which means what? Law of karma. It is law of karma which determines one's rebirth. Rebirth is based on law of karma. Law of karma means what? Again, the rebirth is determined by what? Karma. Karma means what? Karma implies two lifestyles. Two lives. Everyone has external physical life and the inner mental life. Isn't it? We have inner mental life, external physical life. Sometimes our inner mental life, external physical life are in alignment or identical. Sometimes there's total disagreement between the inner mental life and the external physical life. Isn't it? Therefore, both lives contribute for phalam. That is why we'll be careful about what we do externally, what we have internally also. Isn't it? Whether I have plastic smile on my face, inside what I think also counts. Oh my God, this person has come. If I do, it counts both, okay? Therefore, that palam will be accordingly only. That is why inner mental life, external physical life, both may be in alignment, may be identical, may not be identical, may disagree with each other. Therefore, our karma palam is determined by, isn't it, law of karma in keeping with our karma in inner life and external life, physical life. Okay, therefore, this is karma palam, this janma, that is why, what, so if we have lot, only papam, mriga janma, pashu janma, no, sthavara janma, It is possible. No sthavara janma. I mean that in a plant life, plant body, animal body, Shankara Kathopanishad mentions that. Sthanuhu means the unmoving, unmoving, the immobile being, creature, a plant is called sthanuhu in Kathopanishad is mentioned. Therefore, the janma in keeping with one's karma means inner and external life means it can be a plant body, it can be a crawling animal body, creature's body, or a pakshi bird's body, or any other animal body or a human body, or not even lots of, you have both punyam and papam, human body, and then you have only punyam, no papam at all, then you can have deva shariram, deva body, celestial body, doesn't matter. Superior, inferior, mediocre, whatever body you get, any janma. Assumption of any superior, most superior, more superior, so most superior body also implies, assumption of a body implies you are being born with ignorance, inverted comma. Ignorant alone are born. Understand? Therefore, there will be ignorance. Therefore, is what, anything born, therefore, devas also what now? The one who has assumed deva shariram, the celestial body, is a devaha. Manushyaha is asuraha. Devaha is also asuraha. Celestial being also said to be asuraha. Generally, we say, devaha means suraha, and asuraha means demons, we say. Ditihi, daityaha. We say diti sansar daityaha, we say aditi is adityaha. So suraha means devaha. Asuraha means a demon, we say. But here in the Vedantic perspective, the Vedantic view, you see from the Vedanta standpoint, devaha is also asuraha. Why? Devaha is also ignorant. He may have a better body, he may enjoy better, he may have only punyam, he may enjoy only pleasures, not pain at all. Still, ignorance is there. There is no birth with any higher, shariram of higher order also, which is there without ignorance. There is no enlightened rebirth, okay? Ignorance is there. Therefore, devaha also is asuraha. Manushyaha is also asuraha. Any mrugaha is also asuraha. Being born with ignorance means that birth is asuric birth. Birth of an asura. The shairam is asura's body. Okay, then who is suraha then? The question comes, who is suraha? If all those people of different calibers, different orders, assuming different bodies, if all are asuras, because they all of them have ignorance. In every birth there is ignorance. There's a rich ignorant, poor ignorant, beautiful, good-looking ignorant, ugly-looking ignorant, isn't it? Plant with ignorance, manushya with ignorance, the celestial with ignorance. Ignorance is there throughout. There's no life, no birth where there's no ignorance. Then who is a suraha then? He says, Sushtu atmani ramate yaha saha suraha. The wise person alone is suraha. Any ignorant person is asuraha. Wise person alone is suraha. Generally we say devaha asuras, but according to Vedanta Shastram, the one who revels in the vision of non-duality of the self, one who revels in the knowledge of the self, the enlightened wise person alone is Suraha. Anyway, this is the therefore, these ignorant people, after the fall of the body, they take rebirth again and again, assuming different shariams in keeping with their own punya papa they've accumulated in their previous lives, and as determined by the law of karma. Deva asuriyaha asuryan lokan tan atmahanaha abhigacchanti. And then we have one more thing also, we have other word, that is andhena tamasa avritaha. So it's andhena tamasa avritaha is an adjective for this lokaha. So those rebirths which will be, which are going to be there one after other continuously for the ignorant people, not only in this janma, they will be ignorant, this particular birth is filled with ignorance. All the future births also, assuming a body, any body, if you are born again, in every birth, whatever is the birth, whichever is the birth, whenever is the birth, in every future rebirth, there will be continuously ignorance. Ignorance will fill. All the births will remain, will be filled with ignorance. Therefore, now filled with darkness of ignorance. Andhena tamasa avritaha. Is it clear now? Which means, andhena tamasa avritan asuryan tan lokan atmahanaha pretya abhigacchanti. Is a long sentence. They will be continuously given to rebirths, assuming many bodies. They will be born again and again, and which all those lives, rebirths, will be filled with ignorance. Which means, these ignorant people who are born ignorant now, who continue, those who do not take care of their ignorance, who do not sort out their ignorance in this janma, if they miss it, then the following janmas also will be continuously lives, the births of ignorance only. And not only that, the darkness of ignorance will blind them, which may prevent them from having the vision of the self. Is it clear? This is what I want to conclude last. That's why I take my own time to come to Tan, everything. Therefore, what should we do? One should take care of one's fundamental problem of ignorance. The root cause of the fundamental problem, ignorance. One has to sort out. We do not take it seriously. This is a serious problem, and we have to sort out this problem. We have to work for sorting out this problem. That is the implication here. Anyway, now let us go to the fourth mantra. Anejat
Yekam
Manasojaviyo
Manasaha
Javiyaha
Nainat
Devaha Apnuvan
Purvamarshat
Taddhavatonyanatyeti
तिष्ठत
तस्मिन्नपो
मातरिश्वादधाति ओके आई जस्ट सिंपली रेड आउट द वर्स डोंट वरी विल रिपीट एवरी वर्ड आई विल सी सी द एक्चुअल अनफोल्डमेंट ऑफ द नेचर ऑफ द आत्मा आत्मस्वरूपम is revealed in these from this verse onwards. In how many verses? 5 verses. Therefore, the most important of the Ishavasya Upanishad are these 5 verses wherein the nature of the Atma is revealed. This way, Atma Swarupa Pratipadakaha Mantraha. These 5 mantras reveal the nature of the Atma. From this 4th to the 8th, 5 mantras. And here, how is the nature of the Atma revealed? We have to see before we enter into the actual text. There are verses presented. We are going to see how each verse implies the nature of the Atma. So nature of the Atma is revealed. Atma Swarupam is revealed in these verses means how. We have to see the 4 aspects in this particular verse if we take this particular mantra, the 4th mantra. Atma, the 4 aspects of the nature of the Atma are here presented. 4 aspects of the nature of the Atma. What is the first aspect of the nature of the Atma? We can always say one thing easily. You know, Atma Ekaha. Atma is one. We never say just one. That one Ekaha, when you say, one implies what? Implies secondless. One means one alone. That alone is to be implied for secondless. Advayaha. Atma ekaha implies Atma is secondless. Advitiyaha. Not only secondless, there is no second thing other than Atma, nothing else is there. You have to say advayaha, non-dual. Atma ekaha, Atma advitiyaha, Atma advayaha. Atma is one, which means Atma is secondless. There is a second thing other than the Atma, and Atma is non-dual. That is the first aspect of the nature of the Atma. Revealed here in this 4th mantra. We have the philosophers, many different people, the philosophers of different schools of thought, of them the logicians called Tarkikaha, you know, the Tarkashastrajnaha, they're Astikaha. Astika, they are also believers of the Veda. They are not non-believers, not Nastikaha. They are also Astikaha, believers of the Veda. So they have Shraddha in what Veda says. But even though Tarkikaha, the logicians, are Astikaha, the believers of the Veda, still they are of this view, contention. Atmas are many. Not one. So their view, the fallacy in their view has to be understood, and today the view has to be refuted for your ascertainment of your vision, isn't it? See, whenever Vedanta Shastram helps us to refute a view of a given a philosopher of a given school of thought, you have to understand, not for the sake of belittling the person, other person, you know, for you to understand the fallacy in other person's view, is always for ascertaining your clarity. For your own, your clarity should be, you know, ascertained. The vagueness-free clarity must be there. It is for your own clarity you need to see the fallacy in other person's view, and for which you must understand the teaching correctly. Therefore, the Tarkika's view of atmas are many has to be, what now, to refute that, this mantra will be what? Very supportive for you. You need to understand, not simply quoting this, you need to understand how atma is one, how atma is non-dual, how atma is secondless, must be very clear. Therefore, this is the first aspect of the nature of the atma. Then, the second aspect, we say, atma is indriya agocharaha. Atma indriya agocharaha. Manasaha agocharaha. Indriya agocharaha. Which means atma is ever imperceptible. Atma is ever not available for thought perception or no sense perception. So the imperceptibility is the second aspect of the nature of the atma. It's also revealed here. And how it is presented, it is very interesting to note here in this Upanishad. No, it presents in the form in a different, some sort of the poetic, no, way, peculiarly presenting this nature of the, this particular aspect of the nature of the atma. It seems there is, no, the atma is running. Atma is running. And then the sense organs are also running, following the atma, not to go and catch the atma. The peculiar presentation of this teaching, indriya gocharatvam, is presented peculiarly in this mantra. See, sense organs will never be able to, sense organs and the mind will never be able to run along with the atma. Where is the question of catching in or going ahead of the atma? Never. So atma is always a forerunner, and then sense organs, the mind, have to always run behind the atma only. Like this, it's presented differently in this mantra, which implies atma is ever imperceptible, never will be available for sense perception or thought perception. Which means, why? Because atma is never an object of knowledge. Never will be the object of knowledge. You can never say, I know the atma. You can never say, I know Brahma. You can never say, I know the self. You can never say. Know why? If you say, I know the self, I know Brahma, I know Param Brahma, if you say, I know the reality, means what? The Brahman Atma becomes the object of your knowledge. When you have the vision, you will say, Aham Brahma. You will not say, I know Brahman. You will say, I am Atma, you will say. Isn't it? Like Hastamalaka, how he says, Sanityopalabdhisvarupoham Aham Atma. Aham Atma, you can say. You will never say, I know Atma. When you understand. Therefore, that is also presented here. Indriya agocharatvam of the Atma, the second aspect of the nature of the Atma also is presented here. The third aspect of the nature of the Atma is, you can say, first I said Atma yekaha, then I said Atma manasaha agocharaha indriya agocharaha. Then third aspect is say, Atma sarva antaryami, sarvantaryami. Sarvantaryami. Antaryami means what? Antaha sthitva sarvan sarvam yamayati niyamayati iti antaryami. Means the one who remaining as the innermost essence without doing anything, effortlessly by its mere presence, activates everything. So again, activates means, does Atma do the act of activating? No. You mean the one because of whose presence, the one because of whose presence everything acts, everything becomes capable of functioning and acting, is said to be antaryami. Yamayati, niyamayati, iti yami. But where does it? Yami means the one who, the activator, isn't it? Where is it? Where is available for every outside? No. Not available for her perception, but remaining behind everything, remaining as the innermost essence, one whose mere presence contributes for the function and activities of everything, is said to be antaryami. That is why the antaryami, we can also say what now? Adhishthanam, adhisthanam. Adhishthanam means the very substratum of everything. It is adhishthanam. So another aspect of the nature of the Atma. Here, how do we understand this? See, other than the Atma, Atma is there. Other than the Atma, the self, the reality, everything else is what? Anatma, isn't it? Atma, Anatma, reduce the whole into two as Atma, Anatma. Other than Atma, the Anatma, the entire Prapanchaha, the entire objective universe, Anatma is Jadaha. Anatma Prapanchaha, Anatma Prapanchaha is Jadaha, it is inert, isn't it? Other than the self, everything else is inert universe. The jada prapancha, the inert universe, the inert material universe is incapable of being achetana. Now, being inert is incapable of functioning by itself, incapable of being active by itself. Isn't it? Therefore, it will be non-existent actually. Therefore, what is that which makes everything act, function? What is that whose presence, mere presence, without doing anything, but its mere presence, which makes the inert conscious and sentient, and which makes the inert function and which activates everything, is said to be antaryami. It is sarva adhishtatru. Sarvasya adhishtanam. Another aspect of the nature of the Atma. The fourth aspect presented here is, why I have to say all this, you have to prepare you before entering the verse. Every time, this is how you have to understand. Our Isha verse will go above the head, won't go into the head. The fourth aspect of the nature of the Atma is what? The Atma viewed from two different angles. See, from the Sopadhikaha Atma, Nirupadhikaha Atma. We don't have two Atmas, okay? Atma is one. Only Atma. Already we have seen one. There won't be doubt, no? Oh my God, two forms of Atma, you will never have doubt. There are two forms of Atma. Atma is one means, as we say, only Atma, only secondless non-dual Atma alone is viewed from two different angles. Now, you view the Atma from the angle of the Upadhi. Now, with the Upadhi, you see the Atma with the Upadhi. You also see the Atma without Upadhi. Sopadhika Atma means seeing the Atma with the Upadhi. Atma with the Upadhi is one form. Atma without the Upadhi means you don't remove the Upadhi. Cognitively, okay, deleting the Upadhi, you see the Atma. Seeing the Atma cognitively deleting the Upadhi is called what? Nirupadhika Atma. And seeing the Atma with Upadhi is what? Sopadhika Atma. Atma is, Anna, the two forms of the Atma. With Upadhi, without Upadhi. Sopadhika Atma, Nirupadhika Atma. So, when you say Atma is Ekaha, Atma is Advayaha, Atma is one, secondless, non-dual. It is from the standpoint of, which is when you see Atma as Nirupadhika Atma, now you delete, cognitively remove the Upadhi, you can see Atma as one, secondless, non-dual. One. We see the Atma with Upadhis, my God, innumerable, many countless forms, isn't it? Aneke, ekaha aneke, many are many. With Upadhi you see Atma as many, without Upadhi you see Atma as one. Is it clear? And in this particular mantra, how Atma as Nirupadhika Atma, Atma without Upadhi is of the nature of motionlessness. Motionlessness means what? That which remains the same, isn't it? It is firm, unmoving, time-wise and also spatially. Time-wise also unmoving. Spatially also is immovable. Time-wise unmoving, spatially also immovable. Which means, is called that which does not stray from its nature. That which remains the same always. Is called that's called motionlessness. Being one, all pervasive. Being all pervasive, it is unmoving. So from this, as Nirupadhika Atma, Atma without the Upadhi, if you see, it is of the nature of motionlessness. One, all pervasive, therefore unmoving, secondless, therefore immovable, which means that whose nature is ever the same. One whose nature does not undergo any change at all. The original nature. Is it clear? So when you say one, one implies what? Secondless. Secondless implies what? Non-dual. Non-dual means we say what now? When you say it is all pervasive, one secondless means what? Secondless means definitely there is no division as what? It, Atma is neither the subject nor the object. For if there is a subject, there must be an object. If there is an object, there must be a subject. Therefore, when you say one, subject-object division is not there. Not only that, all the differences are also not there. So, one implies Atma being secondless. Secondless implies Atma being non-dual. Atma being non-dual implies Atma being free from divisions and differences. What divisions are not there? Knower, known, subject-object division is not there. Not only that, free from all differences. What differences? I taught you earlier also. Sajatiya bhedaha, vijatiya bhedaha, swagata bhedaha. There are three, four differences. Now, sajatiya bhedaha, when you say, we can say, suppose manushya jatihi, a human jati. Human beings, they all form one group of beings. And the human beings are different from animals. Other animals, four-legged animals, because we're also animals, that's why. Four-legged, two-legged are different from, no, the other animals. Or we can say sthavara jati, plant jati. Plant jati is different from animal jati. Animal, human beings are different jati, different from animal jati. This difference is called vijatiya bhedaha. Vijatiya bhedaha means what now? Difference between three species, types of species, isn't it? Human beings, other animals and plants. Vijatiya bhedaha. Species difference. And there again, of the human beings, we say, stri jati manushya, purusha jati. This sajatiya bedaha. Difference within a group, a given species. Is it? The given group. So, difference between the groups, difference within the groups is called sajatiya bedaha. Then swagata bedaha. Each human being can take so many spare parts put together is that's why you can say spare part banks we have, kidney bank, heart bank, no, not kidney bean, kidney bank, heart bank, blood bank, eye bank, why all spare parts available. Somebody dies somewhere, go and then they give dhanam. And if you have the paradama, have somebody else's, we'll have. If it works, it works. Doesn't work, doesn't work. Spare parts bank. So all many spare parts put together is what? Like any car, is also many spare parts put together. That is why spare parts means what? Swagata bhedaha. Head is different. Kidney is different, heart is different, lungs are different, legs are different, shanks are different, thighs are different, knees are different. Each part is different from every other part. Every part different from every other part. This is called what? Difference within a given thing, one being, one thing, one object. It's called swagata bhedaha. So, all these differences, vijatiya bhedaha, sajatiya bhedaha, swagata bhedaha, all these differences, Atma is free from all these differences. Atma is free from all divisions. Atma is of the nature of divisionlessness. Okay? Indivisible, partless, whole. Which I've been telling you this word. This is all implied by this one word, Ekaha Advayaha Advitiyaha. No, all implied. Therefore, we say, nirupadika drishtya. So from this, no, without the, if you see the atma cognitively resolving the upadhi, atma is what? No? Atma is of the nature of motionlessness. We see atma with upadhis, atma is what now? Atma moves, moving. It is atma, the one who moves in all the movements, all the motions are what? Atma only. Not a raja. Not one dance. The whole cosmos is dance. First, everything is what? All the actions, all the functions, all the movements, you can see in atma. This is what? Okay, seeing atma from two different angles, as nirupadikatma, as sopadikatma. So these are the four aspects of the nature of the atma are discussed in this verse, fourth verse. What are the four aspects? Remember again, oneness of the atma or non-duality of the atma, then imperceptibility of the atma, then substrate, no? Yeah. Then the inner activator of the atma, then the atma, two different angles. Now, atma being seen in two different angles, two forms of atma, as one atma with upadhi and atma without upadhi. Okay, the four aspects of the swarupam of the atma are discussed here. Okay, with this understanding, we have to go to the verse. Anejat.
Anejat.
Ane, take the first verse. First word is anejat. Each word is what? Implies the swarupam. See, the verse here, anejat is used here as is a neuter gender word. Therefore, atma is a masculine gender word. Shankaracharya, what he does in his commentary, atma tattvam. You add the word tattvam, so make it a neutral gender word. If you say atma, it must be, isn't it? But atma tattvam is what is called grammatical aspects, don't worry. So ejat, you know, its a root is age. Age means to move, to go. That is the meaning. But anejat, and then the one more thing you have to understand here, the root age dhatuhu is an atmanepadi dhatuhu. Atmanepadi dhatuhu. It is not parasmipada dhatuhu. Parasmipadi dhatuhu. Because it's atmanepadi dhatuhu, it should only take shanach pratyayaha, not shatru pratyayaha. It's in the present participle. Ajat means moving. It must have been ajamanaha. It shouldn't have been ajat. So I'm sorry. Okay, I can't help. I have to tell you all this. Accidents. It must have been I can't help it. I'm sorry. Ajamanaha. It must have been. But it is ajat. It is a chandasa prayogaha. It's a Vedic usage. In Veda, it can be what now? It should have been ajamanaha, but it has, no, or no, ajamanam. But here, upadhi presents ajat. Is it clear? So, you can take, what does it mean now? Moving. But it is atma is of the nature of motionlessness. Anejat. Anejamanaha it must have been. But what Upanishad presents? Anejat. Anejat means unmoving. motionless, which is of the nature of motionlessness. Why it is of the nature of motionlessness? You know, motionlessness also implies that which, you know, kalataha atma dhruvaha deshataha achalaha. Spatially it is what? Immovable, okay, unmoving, and time is what? Dhruvaha, firm, isn't it? Why it is immovable, unmoving? In Bhagavad Gita we came across this word, no? Nitya sarvagata sthanuhu achaloyam sanatanaha. Sthanuhu achalaha. Two words you have to take. Sthanuhu means what? Unmoving. Achalaha means immovable. Therefore, it is of the nature of motionlessness. Motionlessness also implies what? Actionlessness. Actionlessness also implies what? Silence. Atma does not speak, does not do any action. Atma does not move. So motionlessness implies actionlessness, silence. Silence is the swarupam of the Atma. Actionlessness is the swarupam of nature of the Atma. How Atma is? Atma means here, you know, I am not using the word consciousness yet, because that we'll see later on. Okay, I'm just using the term. Let's take the word Atma and then we talk about it. Slowly I'll take you. So silence, actionlessness, motionlessness means, no, he swaswarupa prachyutihi. Shankara says beautifully here. Swaswarupa, no, prachyutihi is not there. That whose nature does not stray away from its nature, whichever remains the same. Therefore, anejamanaha, anejamanam atmatattvam, anejat. Why? Because it is all pervasive also. That is not said here. We have to understand. Why? How do you say it is all pervasive? You know, all pervade, it pervades the space, it pervades the time, it pervades all that which exists within time and space. There is no time which exists outside of the Atma. There is no space which exists outside of the Atma. There is nothing else, anything which exists within the realm of time and space. Everything is what now? Is now pervaded by the Atma, all pervasive. No? Why? Because it is Ekaha. See the next one now. Ekaha. Then we can say Ekam. It doesn't, Atma Ekaha, but here Ekam, it is said why? Atma Tattvam Ekam. You can say Atma Tattvam or you can say Atma, both mean the same. Okay? The reality obtaining as the self is what? Ekam one. One implies what? There is no second reality. It is secondless, it is non-dual, ekam. What is the literal meaning today, okay? Then, ekam. Manasaha javiyaha. Manasaha javiyaha. Look at this. Just now we saw anejamanaha anejate. Is anejamanam atmatattvam we saw. Now it says manasaha javiyaha. See, javaha means speed. Mano javam maruta tulya vegam. Remember that verse. Anyway, now here javaha means speed. And now javaha is a speed, so fast. And faster, you want second comparative degree is what? Now we can say javiyan. Fastest javishta, javishtaha, javaha, javiyan, javishtaha. You have to say. So you say, otherwise, java, javas, javiyas, Javishta in neuter gender. Anyway, it means manasaha javiyaha. No, faster than the mind. Atma is said to be faster than the mind. Here, which means just Atma is of the nature of motionlessness, which means Atma must be moving. Faster than the mind means what? Something very interesting you have to know. Manasaha javiyaha, faster than the mind means, mind is the fastest of all that which moves here. All those things which move, light, we have light speed now, no? What all things move? Fastest, we have calculated even speed of the light. Is it? Prakasha Javaha also we have calculated, my God. But here, what is it which mind is the fastest of all those things which move, and Atma is faster than the mind. Which means, Atma being faster than the mind implies what? Even mind cannot reach, catch hold of Atma. Which means Atma will never be available for thought perception. Atma will never be an object of thought, object of knowledge. Okay, one thing, one meaning. And here, how do we say the mind is the fastest? We have to understand first how mind is the fastest. Then we can think of how Atma is faster than the mind. See, mind is the fastest means, sitting here, I went to Coimbatore and came within 1 second. Isn't it? No flight ticket, nothing. I went to UK, as you know, I just missed all my friends and came back. Sitting here, we go to California, we go to, you know, all the places, wherever relatives are there. You know, we all go all the time. All the time mentally we travel. How long does it take for the mind to reach? Mind is the fastest. Isn't it? But Atma is faster than the mind. How? A Atma is all pervasive. Atma does not need to travel. Wherever the mind goes, there Atma is already there. Atma need not travel. Atma need not travel to be faster than the mind. Atma without requiring to travel is already always there, all pervasive. It's like what, you know, suppose imagine every time you get into the flight. My God. I'm traveling all the way from here to there. When I land, where will the flight land? Will there be space for the? Will there be enough space for the flight to land? Or for me, when I get down, will there be enough space for me to walk around? Do you have to plan, worry? Or will there be light? Will there be sun when I land there? Will there be light at all? Will there be darkness? Wherever you go, you land, before you, sunlight is there, sun is there, space is there. Isn't it true? To receive you. Similarly, wherever the mind goes, attention goes, there already Atma is. Because of its all pervasiveness. This is sarvam apnoti iti atma, that which already has reached everything, ever, you know, that which remains ever, you know, already it pervades, ever already pervades everything. There was everywhere it is there. Already it has reached everywhere. That's what is called atma also. And here I want to tell you one thing. See, the mind by itself is of the nature of inertness. Mind is of the nature of inertness. So every thought modification, all the thoughts which constitute the mind, also what? Every thought is inert nature. And thought is called antahkarana vrittihi. So suppose this is a book. That has to take place. This is a book. So thought goes out. You know, thought travel. Thought goes out and pervades the object. And thought does not illumine the object. When the thought goes out, there already Atma is. There Atma is what now? When the thought goes out, Atma is already there, manifesting in the thought, isn't it? When thought goes, Atma illumines the thought. Thereby what? The illumined thought illumines the object. The thought goes, inner thought goes out. Thought is never inert, okay? Always thought is what? Illumined thought only. The thought goes out and the Atma need, the thought need not take the conscious along with the Atma, along with it. Atma goes means, the thought goes means, thought, Atma is there everywhere. Therefore, wherever the thought goes, like wherever you lift, shift the mic from here, there is light, isn't it? There'll be the mic will shine everywhere. Why? Whether the mic is placed here, whether the mic is kept there, mic is taken there, mic is taken other side, the opaque mic will shine anywhere because the whole room is well lit with, this whole hall is well lit with the light. This will reflect light. You can't say, when it shift this mic from here to there, oh, there also mic shines because the mic has light of its own. No. Whether it shines here, it shines there, it shines because there is reflection of the light. The mic reflects light wherever it goes, not because it carries the light. Light does not travel along with the opaque mic. Light is already there, is expecting the mic to come, receiving the mic to come. When the mic goes there, there also mic shines because already there is light. It's the best example, I think, I'm sure. Is it clear? Similarly, Atma is always there, everywhere there. So whenever thoughts go out, what happens? Thoughts shine and the illumined thoughts, what now? Pervade the object and thereby what now? The object also shines. Atma, understand now? The thought, the mic need not carry light wherever it goes. It cannot carry also. It moves in light. Similarly, thoughts move. The very movement of the thoughts is because of the Atma. And the moving thoughts shine wherever they move because of the all-pervasive Atma. And then these shining thoughts become capable of illumining external objects also because of the Atma. Look at this. Therefore, it is said poetically what? Atma is faster than the mind. Atma without the upadhi called mind, anejamanam atmatattvam. Atma is the nature of motionlessness if without the upadhi called mind. With the upadhi mind, Atma is not moving even then. Now, the Atma is as though moving because of the movement of the upadhi. Sopadika mana na mana upadhi drishtya Atma is faster than the mind. But nirupadika drishtya Atma is of the nature of motionlessness. Got this? Yeah. Now next line. Na yenath devaha apnuvan. Na, never, not. Yenath means this self, in objective case it is. Devaha apnuvan. Here, you have to understand one more thing. The word devaha literally means what? Any phenomenon is called devaha. Natural phenomenon is devaha or devata. And devaha also means celestial. But here, devaha means an illuminator. Anything which is capable of a luminous, anything which is luminous, which is capable of illumining is called devaha. But in this context, sense organs are meant by the word devaha. That's why you have to be very careful. Okay? Devaha here means what? Sense organs. Why sense organs are mentioned by the word deva? Kishava's Upanishad always use different words. You had lokaha, different meaning. Understand? So devaha here means what? Indriyani. Devaha is equal to indriyani. Jnanendriyani, sense organs. Why sense organs are said to be illuminators? Because every sense organ illumines its corresponding object. Isn't it? The form, color, light, shape are illumined by your seeing power. Sound is illumined by your hearing power. Smell is illumined by your smelling, power of smelling. Taste is illumined by your own power of taste. Touch is, it's cold, it's hot, it's warm. How do you say? Illumined by your own power of touch. Therefore, each sense power happens to be, you know, illumining its corresponding object. Each sense power is said to be devaha. Is it clear? Therefore, in fact, the sense powers by themselves are also what now? Each sense power is subtle power. Very subtle power, isn't it? Each sense power is any, even though it's a power, it's a power, but the power by itself is inert. Any shakti by itself is inert. The power becomes a power, the power can enjoy the status of being the power only if it is backed by Atma. It's blessed by Atma. That's why Adhishtata of the sense power is called what? Sense power is Ata. You know, is Adhishtatru, the Antaryami of the sense power. And Adhishtata of sense power is Atma. That's why the one who blesses the sense power, Sarva Anugrahita. The Anugrahita means the one who blesses everything is also what? You know, Atma. You can say Sarva Antaryami, Sarva Adhishtata, Adhishtatru, Sarva Anugrahitru. The one who blesses everything is also what? Atma. So each sense power is a power by itself is inert. The inert power cannot even have enjoyed the existence by itself. Even for the sense power to have the status of being existent, it needs to be illumined. And not, it, for it to become conscious, it needs the blessing of Atma. It needs the inert power, sense powers. No, for the existence, they have to be blessed by Atma. For them to become conscious and sentient, they have to be blessed by Atma. And to become capable of illumining the external world of objects, no, they need the blessing of Atma. Therefore, with these sense powers, no, they don't even have the direct, they can't directly have the connection with the Atma. They have to borrow their capacity to illumine the external world only from the mind. The mind itself is what now? Inert one. This inert, insentient mind has to borrow its capacity to illumine, become conscious and sentient, borrow its existence. Mind has to borrow its existence from the Atma, first of all. Even for existence, mind has to be blessed by the Atma. Existence. Then to become conscious and sentient, it needs the blessing of Atma. Then the capacity to illumine the sense powers, all depends. Now it depends upon the blessing of the Atma. Atmanaha anugraham. Now manaha prapniyat. The mind has to have the blessing of Atma for the existence, for becoming conscious and sentient, and for becoming capable of illumining the sense organs. And these sense powers are dependent on what now? Directly dependent on the mind, conscious mind, for them to become conscious and becoming capable of illumining. And ultimately dependent on the Atma only, for their existence, for becoming conscious and sentient, and for becoming capable of illumining the external world. So such sense powers, you know, sense powers now run after the Atma to catch. That's why Upanishad says, no, it says, Devaha, Devaha na apnuvan. Never do the sense organs reach the Atma. Catch hold of the Atma. Never can they attain Atma. Which means, what does it mean? They can never illumine the Atma. The sense power which are dependent on the Atma for their very existence, for their becoming conscious, for their becoming capable of illumining external world, how can they illumine the Atma? Therefore, Devaha na apnuvan means, no, Atma, as I told you already, Atma is ever imperceptible. Devaha na apnuvan. Then, Purvam arshat. Purvam arshat. Not only the sense organs, also mind. Purvam arshat. Mind also is what now? Mind also is incapable of knowing the Atma, illumining the Atma. Atma is not available for perception of the mind also. So mind also fails in arriving at the Atma. Sense organs also fail in arriving at the Atma. Always in the race, they become defeated. Our Pujya Samji says, always in different contexts for different example, he gives this example. Now, Miss Darkness fell in love with Mr. Sun and wanted to, Miss Darkness fell in love with Mr. Sun. So she goes in search of Mr. Sun. And she goes all the way to that corner. And by the time she goes there, Sun has gone to America. And by the time she goes to America, and Sun goes to India. Like that. What is it? Which means, impossible for Darkness and Sun to meet, isn't it? Like that. Never available. Darkness goes searching, chasing the sun, Darkness goes behind the sun. All the time she is behind the sun, never is she able to reach him. Miss Darkness, Mr. Sun. S-U-N, Sun. Like that is Swamiji's example, I cannot mind. That is why he also bought the sense organs, keep chasing the Atma. The sense organs keep chasing the Atma, always they become defeated. But na apnuvanne purvam arshat. Then tad dhavataha anyan atyeti. Dhavataha anyan atyeti. All these sense organs and mind are running after the Atma. Now, mind, all are running. Our Atma, Dhavataha Anyan Atyeti. Always Atma is just in the forefront of all of them. It's a peculiar way of presenting the imperceptibility of the Atma. Dhavataha Anyan Atyeti. All these, they're on running race, okay? All of them are running. Dhavataha Anyan Atyeti means what? Kadandu Selhirar. Isn't it? Atyeti just runs much ahead of all of them, that in a never reachable distance. Always in an ever unreachable distance. Means what? There's no distance. In really speaking, there's no distance at all between Atma and everything. Okay? Why? Because Atma is never an object of mind and senses. Isn't it? Suppose when you go, you take a torchlight and go and see everything in darkness, isn't it? But where you take the torchlight? Is a torchlight which illumines, is the just the torch illumines the object, or it is the battery? You just take the torch, removing the battery, take the torchlight everywhere. The torch also will be one of the opaque things. If you have to see the torchlight, as well as the torchlight has to have the capacity to illumine an opaque, there must be battery in sense, called antaryamitvam. Understand? That is so. But can you see the batteries? That is so. That's what antahastitva yamayati. That's how Atma is, isn't it? Therefore, atyeti tishtat tasmin apaha. Apaha. Next comes apaha. I had to explain another word, apaha. See, up means water. Pakarantaha strilinga shabdaha. A word ending in pakaranta shabda. Up means water. It's a nitya bahuvachana shabda. Ever in plural. Waters is the Sanskrit, isn't it? Apaha or apaha. So here, see, we'll be very careful again. This word apaha, even though literally it means waters, here it does not mean the water. The implied meaning of the word apaha is karmani, all the action, all the rituals. In India, if you go to temples, no, it won't be clean like the churches, clean and neat. No? All the water, pouring water. Any ritual means, any karma means we need water. No, argyam, padyam, achamanayam. All that's why you see our priests come and all everywhere they'll make it dirty. Why? Because all wet, damp. Why? Because without water you can't any karma. Any karma you do, we need water. And our naivedyam you offer, milk, etc. Isn't it? All wet and damp and we clean place should become dirty. Only it's a puja. We had done the puja. You noticed it, isn't it? You got anything you need water. Immediately you need water for every karma. That is why apaha stands for what? That the water is used in all the rituals and actions. Therefore, apaha implies all the rituals and activities. If you read the verse, they may put the word, I don't know what the translation they have given. You'll be very careful there, okay? Activities. Tasmin tishtat tasmin apaha. Okay? So, therefore, Atma does not do any action, does not move, does not speak, but remaining as the very innermost essence is the blesses all of them in all their functions, all their activities. Okay? That's the meaning of the word apaha means, you understand. I put all of them together and make it. Today only I am doing the word meanings. Like how yesterday I said the third verse meaning I did yesterday. Today also. This fourth verse meaning I will do. The next class, maybe in Petros or when we do, we will cover a lot. All four verses maybe. Okay. Then, next is Matarishwa. This is one word I can... Is it okay if I explain?
Mm-hmm.
It's delay late for you? It's okay? Only one word, okay? This last word. Then I can continue this class. See, Matarishwa literally means Vayuhu. Literal meaning of the word Matarishwa means the air element. The wind, the air is called, air element is Vayu Devata. Vayu is called Matarishwa. Why Vayu is called Matarishwa? Why air is called Matarishwa means, see, Matari, Mata means Antariksham, not mother, okay? Antariksham, the intermediary space is called, space is called Antariksham, is called Mata. Matari Shwayati. Shwayati means Gachati. The one who moves around, moves about within this space is called Matarishwa. Antarikshe Shwayati Iti. Matari Shwayati Iti. Antarikshe Gachati Iti. Okay? Matarishwa. The one who wanders, moves around, moves about within the space is called Matarishwa. Is the name of the air element. But here, Vayu should be taken as Pranaha. Shukad is, Matarishwa is equal to Vayu. Vayu is equal to Pranaha. Pranaha is equal to what? Your vital air. Isn't it? All physiological functions. So, all physiological functions, individual prana is called prana, isn't it? One's own prana. Now, think of totality of pranas. All the pranas put together. Samashti pranaha. Vyashti pranaha is, okay. But here, samashti pranaha is equal to Hiranya Garbhaha. Ishwaraha. The totality of pranas, Hiranyagarbhaha. Now when you say Hiranyagarbhaha, so the Matarishwa is equal to air. Air stands for prana. Prana stands for total prana. Total prana is equal to Hiranyagarbhaha. The total subtle manifestation. So what is Hiranyagarbhaha? Hiranyagarbhaha means is a name given to the subtle manifestation. The total subtle manifestation. You see, the total subtle manifestation is also what? The Lord. The total gross manifestation is what? The Lord. The total unmanifest universe is what? The Lord. Everything is the Lord, isn't it? The total subtle manifestation, samashti sukshma prapanchaha, we give the name. When you see the total subtle manifestation as the Lord, the name given is what? Hiranyagarbhaha. When you see the total gross manifestation as the Lord, you give the name Virat. Is it total unmanifest universe, you give the name Ishwaraha, Antaryami. Okay, you have name. Here let us take only Hiranyagarbhaha, not let us not worry about Virat and Ishwara. So total subtle manifestation means what? Total minds, total, you know, the samashti pranaha, samashti manamsi, samashti buddhayaha, isn't it? The totality of intellects, totality of minds, totality of pranas, totality of even sense powers, totality of powers of organs of actions, isn't it? All these powers in totality put together is what? Hiranyagarbhaha. Now take ni samashti manaha, samashti pranaha, samashti buddhihi. Buddhiha, in fact. Totality of intellects, minds and pranas. All of them we say what? Samashti sukshma prapanchaha. The end, so the subtle manifestation in its entirety is called what? Known by the term Hiranyagarbha. Now he says, and these three functions, no? The mind, each is from a given faculty. Look at this. The samashti pranaha, samashti manaha, samashti, you know, vijnanamayaha, isn't it? So it's all from where? Three different faculties. From Icha Shakti, the Samashti Manaha, totality of minds. From, you know, Kriya Shakti, totality of minds. Icha Shakti minds, the Icha Shakti, Kriya, then Jnana Shakti. From all, you know, from Jnana Shakti, then the totality of intellects. So all these three, prana is from kriya shakti, mind is from icha shakti, and buddhi is from jnana shakti. Is it clear? Intellect is from the faculty of knowing. Mind is from the faculty of desiring. And prana is from faculty of activity. Is it clear? So all these, therefore, now you can understand all these powers will be as good as non-existent. Therefore, all these arising with faculties will be non-existent if they are not blessed by Atma. Therefore, Matarishva means what? The one who, Atma, see, Atma minus Atma, Hiranyagarbha will be as good as non-existent. Hiranyagarbha, where's the question of functioning? Now we say all these functions, isn't it? So the Hiranyagarbha represents all these functions, which are, you know, from different faculties. Now, it is Atma, the one by whose mere presence, because of whose blessings, all these functions are happening, which means the Hiranyagarbha is capable of, you know, functioning because of whose blessings is Atma. Is it clear? Therefore, he says, Matarishva is equal to Hiranyagarbha, the one because of whose blessings the Hiranyagarbha is. Hiranyagarbha is Atma. Now he says Dadhati. See the last word, I'm only doing the word meanings, okay? I'll put them all together and give you the complete total meaning. I'll dictate the notes also for you so that it become to make it clear. Next class. So Dadhati means, literally the word Dadhati means placing. So places. Somebody asked me. Not Dadhati means gives. It is not Dadati, it is Dadhati. Placing, isn't it? But here, ordaining, you know, even delegating, giving. No, this is. So, which means what? The one who delegates all these functions. Hey, mind, you do this. Oh, pranas, you do this. This is your job. Oh, intellect, this is your job. It's as though Atma remaining as the innermost essence, I mean substratum as the Adhara, delegates functions to all of them. Does Atma do anything?
No.
What does Atma do? By its mere precedence, mere presence. Isn't it? In whose presence? It's a Raja. In whose presence? All of them function. Is it clear? In Taittiriya Upanishad, it said, Bhishasmadvatav pavate. It seems even the wind blows being offered of Atma. He said, it's an expression. Which means, in just Atma is present, in the presence of the Atma, everything functions. Everything happens. Atma is not even the activator. The one in whose presence everything functions. The one without whose presence nothing can move. Okay? This is the meaning. We have only seen the word meanings. We will see the whole mantra again next class.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Sri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.